Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of The Front Three, officially the 279th most popular football podcast in the world ever last week. My name is Adam Butwood. Yeah, it's true. Joining me as always is Lawrence McKenna.
Interrupting me from even before the time he introduces me, it's Lawrence McKenna.
And the stat man himself, David O'Brien.
I've actually got a question for you two.
Go on.
What's the difference between a triangle and Chelsea?
Wait a minute. A triangle allows female doctors in it.
Ooh. Nearly. Mate, but a triangle has 3 points.
Ooh.
Whey.
Top notch.
Dave.
Banter. Is that your banter, Dave, or is that
something? That was my banter to kick the show off. You know, I thought we'd get it in early.
What a way to kick it off.
banter bus, eh, Dave?
Didn't it, lads?
Lawrence, you're not actually in the UK at the moment. Where are you calling us from?
Why am I consistently late to the podcast, is what Adam really wants to ask.
No, I'm just intrigued. Yeah.
I'm not in the country. I'm around the world doing other footballing things, which actually take me away from my footballing duties this week, which is actually quite upsetting because, Adam and I normally film on different days, right? I actually have a question for you, Adam.
Go ahead.
You know, you produce, is it public knowledge that you produce on the Football Republic?
I'm pretty sure it's right. Public knowledge, yeah.
Can I just ask why I take all the flack for the fact that I have to judge the competition in front of the camera and then come along and go, he's a piece of shit!
If you don't watch the Football Republic, we do a debate show, and you're right, you do get a little bit of flack over the judgments, the way you judge the debates, but I have been trying to say in the comments, you know, I'm there with you as well, saying that.
Hey, Justin.
And I would actually say as well, this week, Lawrence, there was as many good comments commending your refereeing on Twitter as there were negative ones on YouTube. So I think you're actually...
But you don't get to see those.
I was supposed to, you know, tag them in your at Laws class, but I'll do that now.
You're in another country all on your own. But don't worry about it. Scary Brussels. It's a lovely place. I was really hoping Bruges would be here just the other night, but they're not. So that went well, didn't it, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic, actually, mate. Yeah, brilliant.
We'll come on to that briefly.
Yeah, okay.
Got to do the usual intro. I've got to say thank you for listening to episode 18. Comment of the week last week was from Sahej Verma.
He sent
on Twitter, he sent us synonyms for strong words because there was a lot of strong words last week. There was harsh, he's saying, severe, sharp, acute, drastic, intense, serious, fierce, firm. All words we could use instead of strong words. And strong words is what I'm expecting tonight, Dave, in light of news that Chelsea have agreed a deal for long-term Manchester United target Pedro. Are you disappointed, Dave?
Not arsed. He's a good player, very good player. He'll fit into Chelsea very, very well. You know, Eden Hazard, Creighton on the left, Pedro running in behind on the right. It's going to be quite nice for Chelsea, to be honest. You know, it would have been a good signing for Manchester United. But I quite like the youthfulness of our attack at the moment and sort of Mata coming inside, Depay on the left-hand side. I think problem areas we have at the moment is probably our 10 and our 9. Probably not Premier League winning quality. Obviously, Wayne Rooney's struggling with form at the moment. Januzaj's been pretty good. And then, you know, played some pretty decent passes, but also played some pretty poor passes against Club Brugge. I think they're the two places we want, obviously, at centre-half. Been banging on about that for about 10 years. But Pedro, yeah, good luck to him.
Good luck to him, I like it.
He's going to look great at right wing back, isn't he? He's going to look absolutely fantastic.
Centre half.
Yeah, centre half, Pedro. I do think Mourinho will turn him into a bulldog, though. He'll turn him into something of that ilk, or at least he'll try to. Because Pedro's sort of got a bit of gusto to him, which I like.
Dave, why do you reckon this deal fell apart then? So it's interesting to try and get to the bottom of why he is on his way to Chelsea and not United. Obviously, as I'm saying, they've been linked with Pedro for weeks, if not months now. And we've been hearing in the press over the past week that, you know, the wolf of Old Trafford himself, Ed Woodward, he's been in Spain trying to wrap up a deal. Well, now The Guardian are reporting that Jose Mourinho and Cesc Fabregas personally reached out to Pedro. That's what persuaded him to join Chelsea, whereas Sky Sports are sort of saying United dropped their interest in the player before today, with Van Gaal apparently unconvinced. I mean, where do you think the truth lies in this? Were United snubbed or otherwise?
How are you unconvinced by a player that scored 99 goals in 326 appearances in La Liga from the wing? You know, it's absolutely mental. Ed Woodward, I mentioned this before on the podcast when I went on my absolute rant that he's had a rubbish window. He has had a rubbish window, and this has confirmed it. This Pedro deal should have been done in the bag, signed, sold, delivered. But they've messed about. They've tried to play silly buggers with money, with like €5 million or something like that, which is absolutely nothing. If you compare that, it isn't. But you know what I mean. It's crazy that Edward Wood has bottled it massively in the transfer window. Again, he's made easy signings. I could have made those signings. I could have done Edward Wood's job. Probably got a better deal for Morgan Schneidlin. But it's just mental how, you know, we had David Gill, and he was absolutely slagged off by the fans for the Glazer incident and all that, and some stuff with McManus and JP Morgan. Not JP Morgan, whatever he's called, the other bloke that used to run the club. But now it's sort of like, He's letting himself down, Ed Woodward. And if he doesn't buck his ideas up, we should just boot him. You know, we should get rid. He's just not good enough.
My God.
They paved paradise and put up a fucking lot.
It reminded me of Willian's move to Tottenham back in 2013. He was apparently on the verge of joining Spurs. Chelsea all of a sudden swoop in, you know, snatch the player. But as
Malouda's move to Liverpool.
There you go. As Dave mentioned there, though, Lawrence, you know, Pedro potentially could be playing on the right wing.
Yeah.
Maybe William is moved inside. Maybe it means the end of... maybe.
It's worked so well for all those other early signings. We all know where Malouda is now, topping out in, you know. And then what about Willian, who's week in, week out on the bench for Chelsea? Fantastic. Well, no, can't wait for Pedro to be over there.
What Rory Jennings from Chelsea Fan Channel today said to me is he thinks Pedro's going to play on the right. William's going to play through the centre. Oscar's going to be the one sacrificing his position. Maybe Juan Cuadrado is now going to be on his way out. But where do you see him fitting in? And what do you think he brings to the team that's missing? Why has Mourinho decided that this is the guy who's going to be probably Chelsea's biggest signing this summer, unless they, you know, go all out and get John Stones? So what is he going to bring to that team they've been missing?
There's a lot of different narratives to tie together there, aren't there? I mean, there's the fact that Pedro he's probably suited to the right wing, especially for Chelsea. They've never really had someone who's plundered the right wing in maybe the way that Mourinho wants him to. We all remember what happened with Robin in earlier years, Damien Duff, those kind of guys, and how successful Mourinho felt he was with those kind of guys. So I think maybe he's looking for a more direct player out there, maybe I'm right to say. I wonder why Mourinho wants to sacrifice Oscar. And what the thought process is behind that, whether he will or whether he's just looking for more options, goals-wise, someone who can complement the strikers that he has and the strike force that he has. And also maybe looking at the movement of Pedro and the fact that, you know, he's not only scored goals that you'd expect of a typical winger, but he's also learned a lot from the other Barcelona players around him. And that's what I find interesting is Chelsea are buying a player from Barcelona here. And I mean, that there's something interesting about that in the first place, isn't there? That Barcelona are sort of letting someone go, and Chelsea they're not taking their off casts. But I mean, this is a player who's aging, who's, you know, a good player, but he's not, you know, he's searching towards his prime now. It's not like he's developing into this. He's a player that seems maybe in the Mourinho mold. I think he's not the, you know, he doesn't need shaping. He's going to come in, and you know, I think Mourinho would hope that he's got a little bit more to be able to step in straight away almost.
But it does look like they're going to tie out before the end of the week now. They've apparently agreed this £21.2 million deal. United, on the other hand, Dave, this afternoon it came out that they're interested in Southampton's Sadio Mane. So BBC are saying they're confirming
pound
the interest.
Pound equivalent there of Pedro.
Yeah, a few Man United fans disappointed, but I mean, what are your thoughts on?
To be honest, I'd prefer to have Sadio Mane in my team than Pedro. I watched Sadio Mane.
Sounds like a lot of revisionist history to me there.
From his time at Red Bull Salzburg, you know, back in the day when I was a bit of a hipster. I used to watch the Europa League in the early stages. St. Aubameyang and Kevin Campbell were so good in that team. They were brilliant. Like, they played like a 4-2-4, and they're both the Mene and Campbell were on either flank, and they were just fantastic to watch. The pressing, the harrying, the combination play between those two. And I think he struggled a little bit to adapt to life to the Premier League in his first few months, but then he was played at this second striker role, you know, a position that I do think United are weak in a way, and he's absolutely been brilliant. Since Christmas 2014, he scored 9 goals in the Premier League from midfield. No midfielder scored more goals than him, so he has got calibre. John Terry voted him into his Premier League team of the season because of the problem that he caused John Terry when Southampton played Chelsea. Pretty much in those games, Sadio Mane was the man of the match in both of those encounters. He has calibre, he's a top quality player, and I'd quite like to see him at Man United. If we can get him for something less than 20, then, you know, and he's 23 years old, he's improved massively already through his career. He's one of those players where, you know, where's his peak there, really?
Is it fair to say, though, I mean, he doesn't... There's not really been that many other players at United who have fitted the same mould as Mene, though. That's true, isn't it?
I think that's the thing. Well, with our new system, obviously, Van Gaal is, you know, he's come out and said he likes his number 10 to be a second striker. That's why Mene's so perfect, because he's played that role in the Premier League already and he's excelled at it. So it's like basically you're moving from Southampton, a team in the Europa League, playing a second striker role, to moving to Manchester United and playing a second striker role. I think personally he'd be absolutely excellent at that. You know, running past Wayne Rooney, you know, he's very, very skillful on the ball, very, very good in the box. You know, we sort of lack a player like that. We really do. We lack an explosive player. And then, you know, if things are going wrong, you can stick him out wide and he'll do a really good job for you.
Lawrence, let me come to you about Manchester United's transfer policy, because Dave there was sort of saying, you know, Ed Woodward, it hasn't been great. Obviously, Bastian Schweinsteiger joining the club, Morgan Schneiderlin, fans were overjoyed. But in these past few weeks... We've seen, obviously, Pedro now against Chelsea, Sergio Ramos signing a new deal, and arguably Nicolas Otamendi being another player they've missed out on. So how do you view Manchester United's transfer window? Because at the same time, they have signed Schweinsteiger, Schneiderlin, as I mentioned, Memphis Depay, who looks like he could be a great number 7 for them, Darmian. So how would you rate it?
It's hard to assess from the outside, isn't it, what Manchester United have or haven't achieved, because we know that moves have been made for players, but we don't know how committed those moves have been. I mean, most of the time, I think most United fans would argue is that when United are committed to getting their guy, then in the past, it's generally been the case that they have. Mm. And you'd say that they've shown commitment to the likes of Memphis. I also think they've shown commitment to the likes of Schneiderlin in there as well. And I'm just wondering what's the difference between the players they're chasing there and the players who have actually come. And what I think is, especially when you're in the transfer window, it almost looks like the terrible narratives are wrought out. But a little bit further into the season, I think people turn around and sort of say, oh, well, you know, we made the best of this, or, you know, we signed this guy or this. And I think Dave, as a United fan, is making the best of this. And I think he's right to do so, because Mane is a great option for them. But I think a lot of people will probably go for the mocking side of things, which is, you know, Pedro chose another club over United, and people will read into the reasons for that. Mm. And I think what some people are reading into now is, where do United go from here? And I think some players may be thinking about their long-term goals, and what happens when Van Gaal leaves the club, where do they go after that? And maybe there are people who are thinking, maybe I'm making a counter, but the counterpoint to that would be, what the hell's the future for Chelsea? Because Mourinho's in his third year at this point, and we all know the Bellingham-esque effect that happens in Mourinho's third year. So, you know, if these players are looking to count on their future, I don't know which side I'd pick above the other. And most of the time, to be honest, it would probably be United.
Let's come on to that briefly, seeing as you did bring it up there. But obviously, it's a few days after the weekend. There's been the whole post-mortem again. Manchester City beat Chelsea very comfortably, 3-0. Called a fake result by Mourinho, but debatable.
It was very real.
There you go.
Have 3 points, mate, and I feel terrible for you.
But of course, there was, as well as the defeat, there was another headline-grabbing move by Mourinho in taking John Terry off at half-time. The first time he's done that in 177 games as Chelsea manager. So it all contributed again to this narrative, as you put it, of things going wrong. And as you mentioned, that third season syndrome for Mourinho, where things just sort of, you know, for some people are saying it's the beginning of the end. For you, Lawrence, is that a bit reading too much into things? Is that, you know, trying to put a narrative where there isn't one, or is this, you know, things spiraling out of control for Chelsea?
Mourinho's approach to structure is incredibly all or nothing, which, I mean, has served him very well in the past. But it's also meant that I think it's cast the idea that Rafa Benitez's wife was correct into quite a favourable light, actually, because when you look at what she said, I think she made a lot of good points, and she's not the first person to do that. You know, I think, you know, Jonathan Wilson's been saying it for years that he's almost the Cleopatra of the Premier League and of European football, where he basically takes in a lover and then leaves them jilted at some point. And I think that's part of the problem here, isn't it? Is that we get sucked in by the Mourinho ego-filled rants, and essentially it's another ego. All our egos kind of react to that. And I just wonder, is he going for the, oh, woe is me, or is he going for the long term, which is, you know, if I build that siege mentality that everyone's attacking us, that, you know, people think I've been a bad person, but, oh, look, the press have painted me in this light, let's go out and prove them wrong, let's go out and be successful. But what I'm wondering is, he's spoken about the next, you know, the 10 years when he first came back to the club. How's that shaping up at this point?
Dave, let me ask you about the John Terry situation specifically then, because a lot has been written about this, a lot has been said. As I mentioned, he took him off at half-time. The reasons he gave were that he needed more pace in the second half. That's why he took off Terry for Zouma. But as many people pointed out, why not take off Cahill instead of Terry? So no matter how Mourinho tried to paint it, it did look, it wasn't insignificant to take off the captain, the player who played every single minute of Chelsea's title-winning campaign last season in the second game in what will be potentially one of the biggest games of the season. To take him off at half-time is not something that can be ignored.
Well, tactically, Mourinho got the game all wrong. And, you know, it's been mentioned so many times that the spacing behind Cesc Fabregas was the issue. Mourinho made a very bad call starting Cesc Fabregas at defensive midfield behind, you know, with Matic, with Cesc Fabregas on the right side, Matic on the left-hand side. Obviously, that space with the little triangle of David Silva, Aguero and Raheem Sterling and then Kolarov overlapping was absolutely brilliant in the game. Basically, Mourinho should have changed it. When David Silva started to dictate, he should have moved their midfield round. He should have had Matic sitting, and then Fabregas and Willian ahead of them. He should have flipped the triangle, really. And he didn't do that, and they were exposed time and time again to David Silva running at the defence, which obviously John Terry can't deal with, a very quick striker going in behind and a very, very nimble attacker coming at him with the ball. Correct, yes, take John Terry off and bring on a faster defender in Kurt Zouma, but if he'd started the game with Kurt Zouma playing in that right-sided central midfield option, sitting next to Nemanja Matic, that wouldn't have been an issue in the game. They would have had that magic four, the magic box that Mourinho always loves, two really good centre-halves and two really good defensive midfielders who were defensively strong.
But then why didn't he do that then, Dave?
I don't know. This is the really weird thing. It was like he was trying to push away from the fact that he made a massive tactical blunder, you know, not putting Fabregas at 10 and playing another defensive midfielder in there. And then obviously Ramirez was an issue on the right-hand side as well, you know, not tracking Kolarov properly.
I've seen some, you know, insinuations that this whole game, the whole John Terry situation was a ploy.
That's what I'm sort
that,
of
you know,
saying,
Chelsea need to spend. It's a message to Abramovich that, you know, this squad isn't good enough compared to our nearest title challengers. We need to spend more money. I mean, what'd you make of
good
that?
Good to play that game. Those games have worked well in the past, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, never fails. But what do you think, looking at it, has been a slow start to the season for Chelsea, undoubtedly.
Got that new blood. They haven't done the Man United. When Man United were dominating the Premier League for so many years, they strengthened every single season. They were the top spenders, which kind of makes sense. You know, you win the Premier League, get the most prize money, and et cetera, et cetera. Chelsea have not strengthened at all. They've had a terrible window. They've signed Radamel Falcao. How stupid is that? And they've let Peter Cech come. They signed the pretty good left back in from the Bundesliga. Very, you know, overpriced. He's had one good season, and they've signed him up. I think is it Babaman? Augsburg, very, very good defender, brilliant at winning tackles. But they look like Ivanovic, for me, this season, he looks a bit gone. Like, there was a moment where there was a 50-50 in the centre of the park, Kolarov versus Ivanovic. Every day of the week, Ivanovic was winning that in the last 2 years. Kolarov won it. Kolarov had an absolutely fantastic game. He was brilliant for me. And that was the moment that you're thinking, is Ivanovic sort of, is he done here? Have they got to build this defence back?
He was at fault for a couple of the goals as well. You know, that he lost the header to Kompany. That was obviously an important goal. But it's interesting. I think it is, like you say, Chelsea weren't on great form at the tail end of last season. They made a fantastic start to the season last year. They got a head start on other teams, which is potentially why they won the league. But they were on poor form towards the end of last season. They seem to have carried that over. Fabregas as well didn't have a good game on Sunday. He's someone who, he's leaving Matic a lot of work to do, and Matic as well has been struggling for form by the looks of things. He was very ineffective on Sunday. But looking at Manchester City, who obviously won the game, Dave, they bought Raheem Sterling. He's the most expensive player in, you know, English player in history. It looks like they're going to sign Nicolas Otamendi as well, who may or may not have been a target for Manchester United. The spine of their team as well. You're looking at Kompany, you're looking at Yaya Toure, Aguero, Silva. These players look like they're hungry for the titles. So do you think, even though it's two games in, these Manchester City have become the favourites now?
Well, I think they are definitely favourites. You know, the fluidity of their football against Chelsea was absolutely brilliant. Aguero looks like, you know, banging form again. They've made some very, very, very good signings. And obviously, in Raheem Sterling, and if Otamendi comes in, he'll be a fantastic buy for Man City. If they buy Kevin De Bruyne as well, you know, wow, that is an absolute side. But it's going to be interesting. You know, obviously, teams fluctuate their form. Man City have absolutely blown away people at the start. Are they going to do an Arsenal? Are they going to drop off? You know, we had a bit of an issue with Pellegrini towards the back end of last season, where there was murmurs around him leaving and Guardiola's coming in. You know, that could happen again this season. Obviously, he has signed a new deal, but Guardiola's contract to Bayern Munich does it expire at the end of this season. And this narrative that's going around that Guardiola's going to take over at Man City, still going to be in his ear and it's still going to be there. Questions about Raheem Sterling. You know, he started pretty well in his career. Can he keep that going on? You know, the likes of Yaya Toure has absolutely been fantastic in the first two games. Can he continue that form? Aguero, can he stay fit? If he does, City will win the league. You know, there's a lot of questions about City, but they've started excellently. And Vincent Kompany looks like he's gone to the gym, looks like he's bulked up, and he looks like the Vincent Kompany of old again.
looks like he's lost body fat as well.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah. Lean.
Yeah, lean.
Lean, mean, fighting, title-winning machine.
Company machine.
Other transfer news. So, West Bromwich Albion have rejected a bid from Tottenham, £15 million, for Saido Berahino. What I've seen of him this season, I've been unconvinced. He's had a few pretty glaring opportunities in the first opening two games. Lawrence, if, as is expected, Tottenham go back, pay £20-25 million and bring him to Spurs, do you think this is really the right signing they need? They need those striking options, of course, to support Harry Kane now. Old Bobby Soldier's gone off to Villarreal. But is Berahino really the guy that we need?
They need a striker. Well, that's what I'm wondering is, do they need two strikers of that ilk? Or do they need someone with a little bit more experience? The problem is, I mean, it runs a similar narrative to the Bale, Sterling, any other young guy, a Premier League club kind of narrative, that if you become undroppable or you become the first name on the team sheet, et cetera, then what happens when you sign someone else? Do you make a partnership, or does the manager make it very clear and very public that there has to be some policy of rotation? I think that's the problem for Spurs right now, is that so much of the public perception for them is based on their identity of Harry Kane, that when you think about them signing Sado, or you think about them signing maybe even a more experienced striker, then you end up with two juxtaposed ideas, which is, well, who the hell can Harry Kane play with? Who will complement him? And I'm just wondering, do they need a different kind of striker? And how different is Sado Berahino from Harry Kane? I mean, he's certainly, you'd say, a more conventional striker than Harry Kane. He certainly looks a lot more conventional. But then that's part of the problem, is the analysis of him is never at a top side. So his movement may be completely unlocked by a team like Spurs, whereas a club like West Brom, where he's been for a couple of years, he's still surrounded by quality players, but not the same kind of player or the same kind of movement that maybe you get under Pochettino. And I mean, I think for that reason, he would be signing at the right time, right, Dave?
Yeah, I think I quite like Berahino. Well, from what I saw last season, his form this year, though, you know, form this season over the two games has been rubbish. But then that's down to a bit like West Brom have changed their style. They've brought in Ricky Lambert. They're going too direct too early. And they just look pretty rubbish, West Brom, this season. Berahino, though, it's a weird one. They've signed, you know, Spurs have signed in G from Lyon. They're pretty much, they're the same player. You know, they're both quite small, nimble, very, very quick, pretty decent technique. It's a weird one. I think Spurs need to probably go more down the line of buying someone that's sort of a second striker that can play behind Harry Kane, that can work off Harry Kane knocking the ball down, or Harry Kane bringing him into play and that type of thing. I don't think Harry Kane's, you know, he's not going to play behind a striker. That's not really his game. I think he is the focal point. I think that Spurs have lacked an attacking midfielder that plays behind the striker. Like, you know, me personally, I like Christian Eriksen on the left-hand side. I think he's fantastic there. I think Spurs have actually lacked a number 10, like a Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley started this season flying. He'd be a good signing for Spurs. You know, someone that's been good, you know, was really good, scored some absolute bangers, hit a bit of bad form. Now he's back in the Everton team and he's looking pretty good again.
How much would he cost, though? I mean, who's going to cost?
That's 50, the issue, I think.
50 mil. I reckon that's. I can see him going to Man City in the next couple of seasons myself, but I think that's wishful thinking to say Spurs there. But other transfer news, we've got Florian Thauvin. I don't know if I've pronounced that right at all. He's the Marseille attacker who's gone to Newcastle by looks.
I think it's Thauvin or something like that. But like, come on. I don't know.
We usually mess up one pronunciation, so we may as well let it be that one. But yeah.
Just the one.
Newcastle have signed him with Remy Cabella, loaned to Marseille in exchange. So it's £12 million. I mean, Dave, what have you seen of this player, if anything? Do you think that they've made the right move there, letting go of Cabella, who never really had the chance to prove himself at Newcastle, a player who was touted as someone with a lot of potential?
Yeah, Remy Cabella is an interesting one. He was absolutely fantastic for Montpellier. He carried them for a season on his shoulders, and then it goes to Newcastle and they just don't play him. And the classic Newcastle, you just get a buy in a foreign star and then he goes within a season on loan or whatever. But Thauvin is really interesting. He actually moved to Marseille last summer. He basically put in a transfer request. He was at Lille and I think he was their player of the year that season. And he just threw his toys out of the pram, didn't want to turn up to training, got his move to Marseille. And he was at Marseille last season. Obviously, we've seen Dimitri Payet absolutely tear the league up. Dimitri Payet, for me, was the better of the attacking midfielders at Marseille last season. Played lovely football, but, you know, Payet was better. He's an interesting one. He's a very creative forward. You know, he's a dribbler, you know, pretty decent at crossing. But just seems, for me, it's a really strange move for his career. He was at Marseille, who were playing in Europe. The European Championships is in France. Would you not want to stay domestically, do well in the French league, get noticed, get in the French squad, not moving to Newcastle United, that are in a club in real transition?
But Dave, go and, I mean, look at what's happening at Marseille right now.
Yes, but then that's even bigger an issue. Then he can carry Marseille and he can get that shirt in the French squad. You know, he's got an opportunity there. There's a big transition in Marseille at the moment, but he could stay there and he could fight for Marseille.
It's a huge tactical transition. And I mean, what he's playing alongside there is a load of players who really ran their hearts out last season. And then this season, we're looking at them. We all know what happens when you lose someone like, you know, someone who pushes aside so far.
But we also,
I'm just wondering, is he jumping ship, basically?
Well, maybe that's what he's doing. But we also see, after Bielsa comes, the next coach that comes in after Bielsa usually does quite well. Because the players are literally, you know, the players are like, oh my God, we've had to do so much running last year. We've had to work our socks off. And now the guy just comes in and is like, yeah, we're just going to have one training session a week now, guys. One training session a day, sorry, guys.
One training session a week. Dave, bloody hell. Ligue 1's easy, but it's not that easy, Dave.
Yeah, true. But Marseille have started the season pretty awfully, you know, lost both of their games. So but maybe he's jumping ship. He has created more chances than any Marseille player this year. That's not saying much because they lost both of their games 1-0.
Our old friend Kristen Hennage on Twitter said he was very surprised that Newcastle pushed for that deal. Nothing to suggest he's worth it. So
yeah, you know. I think, there goes Kristen undermining everything we've just said. What about the? I mean, if they were to get another decent striker at Newcastle, then that makes them a slightly more exciting prospect. And I'm just like, how far should they push to get Charlie Austin?
I think that they should have gone for Charlie Austin over Mitrovic. Mitrovic was a gamble, very talented individual, but an absolute nutcase. We've seen with his two bookings already this year in two games, and he's a nutter. Charlie Austin is a Premier League goal scorer. This is the problem with, obviously, with Liverpool and Spurs. What they did poorly with the money that they got from Bale and Suarez was invest it outside the Premier League. Newcastle had an opportunity to invest inside the Premier League for a proven goal scorer, and they went elsewhere. A bit stupid, in my opinion.
Other transfer news, Gökhan Inler has completed his move to Leicester City.
Football's broken.
Top of the Premier League, Leicester City, might I add, from Napoli. Yeah. He's joined on a three-year deal. What makes you say football's broken there, Dave?
Do you see the crazy players going around? Like, we've got Shaqiri going to Stoke, and he didn't even turn up for the first time they offered him a contract. He didn't even turn up to the negotiations, and he signs because they offer him 79 grand a week or whatever. And now this move as well. It's just absolutely mental. It's just money, isn't it? Premier League is just run back. We do know it, but it seems like this summer it's been so apparent that like middle Premier League teams are going crazy, like Redondo going to West Brom. Football is broken.
But it, I mean, that's the interesting thing, though, isn't it? That middle class is really strengthened within the Premier League, and that makes the league so much more. Well, I mean, we say it makes the league so much more competitive. Just getting a couple of players doesn't make the league more competitive always, but it certainly. I mean, it shows the intent of a lot of these sides. I think it also shows the. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Is the Premier League hasn't always been great at buying. I was looking at the way that the Premier League buy against, say, other people around other leagues around the world, and you'd say that consistently, La Liga is better at buying than most other leagues, alongside Bundesliga.
The Bundesliga, definitely.
And that's the thing, is that the Premier League's been really poor with some of its buys down the years. And so we are naturally very sceptical because we see this trend. But I'm just wondering if there are a few managers now who are coming into the Premier League, such as Ranieri, such as maybe McLaren, who are seeing other people who have bought around, and maybe they're trying to bring in that style of thinking. I don't know. Maybe it's not applicable to the Premier League, but then at least that's an idea that is worth floating.
100%.
Just going to run through a little bit of transfer news quickly then, just a few little updates. West Ham have apparently sealed a deal for Alex Song. Quickly, Dave, is that a good move for West Ham? Good signing?
Yeah, excellent. Alex Song, it's a weird one, isn't it? He's a really, really, really good player. I'm surprised more Premier League teams haven't looked at him. Someone like Liverpool... Alex Song,
his
attitude does stink, but when he's playing, he plays very well. Okay, maybe not Liverpool, let's say. Maybe like
Everton?
A Tottenham would be interesting, or an Everton. Yeah. You know, that'd be a very good signing.
Or a Villa.
Oh, no, Villa have bought from Ligue 1 only. They only go to France to buy their players this summer, mate.
The thing is also, though, I mean, it's also down to what the lifestyle the player wants, right? I mean, living in London is incredibly desirable. If you move to West Ham, you aren't living near the stadium. And, you know, well, unless you, of course, you want to move to Stratford in the end. But the point would be that you're in London. And, you know, there's a real pull to that, I think.
Also, is that why Pedro went to Chelsea?
No, Dave, you're not Brendan Rodgers.
Also, we've got Liverpool apparently rejected an approach from both Roma and Bayer Leverkusen for Mamadou Sakho. Lawrence, keen to hold on to Sakho? He's still only young, still a player of a lot of potential. We Reds fans seem to like. Not fussed.
maybe not fussed.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Everton have apparently agreed a deal for Andre Yarmolenko.
I'm fussed, but also when you see people like Joe Gomez coming into the club and you see that Sakho is consistently not playing, then you think there must be a reason. It's not that I'm not fussed. It's that I almost think, look, a move for you would be really great here. I love watching you play for Liverpool, but I don't know if Brendan Rodgers trusts you. And so for that reason, maybe it's best to move on. And so it's not that I'm not fussed about him. I like him as a player. I like him as a character. What I'm not fussed about is the idea that he might move on, if that makes sense.
Fair enough. As I was saying there, Yarmolenko to Everton. Dave, apparently it's a £17.5 million fee. That's pretty extravagant.
No, that's a very, very good deal. He was excellent in the Europa League last season. Very, very, you know, he pretty much carried Dynamo Kiev in terms of the attacking potential to the, I think they got to the quarterfinals, I think they got to, and they lost to Fiorentina. But he was fantastic. You know, I think he got more assists than any other player in the Europa League last season. He was just really, really good. I really liked him. He was a player that I'm surprised not, you know, the likes of like AC Milan who are rebuilding, Inter Milan who are looking for a winger, didn't go for him. And it's really interesting. You know, he created more goals in the Europa League than Kevin De Bruyne, and that guy can make an assist for fun. You know, a very technically gifted forward, plays on the left-hand side, right-footed again, you know, an inside forward type player. It'd be a brilliant deal for Everton, that.
Speaking of De Bruyne, as you mentioned there, Wolfsburg apparently willing to sell for $57 million. Only if City, you know, meet that asking price. We'll wait to see if that happens. Can't really see it myself. Chelsea as well.
If you go to 57, then you can go to 60.
That is a lot of money, isn't it? He would be, if they go to 60, he would become the most expensive Premier League player in history, which seems absurd.
No. I mean, this is quite a player, isn't it?
Yes.
I thought was interesting today. So we were talking with Rory Jennings and Stephen Howson for Full Time Devils about this whole Pedro deal, and Rory was pointing out that he was still a little bit upset about the Juan Mata situation, because you looked at Man City's bench at the weekend.
Yeah.
Sorry, you looked at Chelsea's bench at the weekend, and you know, Victor Moses on there, Cuadrado's on there. They could have had Juan Mata, for example, Andre Schürrle, and Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah. So do you think, Dave, looking at that, looking at it in hindsight, obviously, hindsight's a beautiful thing. Did Mourinho make a mistake in letting those players go? Or, you know, they won the title last season. Was he perfectly entitled to do what he did?
No, he's absolutely messed up, hasn't he? He had a very functional player in Andre Schürrle. You know, brilliant at getting on the end of through ball, similar to what Pedro's going to do. But Andre Schürrle is a bit more technically gifted. You know, he let Kevin De Bruyne go because he fell out with him because he didn't play him enough. And, you know, God knows why. He would be the perfect second striker in Chelsea's system. And it's just mental. It's just this crazy one. You know, Cuadrado, an absolutely technically brilliant player. For Fiorentina, the start of the season, he was absolutely carrying them. The ball, they're playing a 3-5-2, the ball would come to him in the striker position and he would just make things happen. Yet he's at Chelsea and it just seems like his confidence is shot. It's a crazy one. I really like Cuadrado, and it seems like Mourinho has ruined him for everybody.
Finally, on confidence being shot news, Roberto Soldado has moved to Villarreal. £7 million, that's a £19 million hit for Spurs on that one. Did you see his confidence being so low that he failed to kick the ball into the crowd at his unveiling? And he did it twice.
I think, didn't he kick it over the crowd though? I thought he kind of kicked it long.
It was brilliant. I absolutely
love
it.
I just hope he scores 25 league goals in La Liga this season. Yeah. He's a happy guy.
I think Spurs fans should be commended for. I went to a few games and I was shocked at the reception he used to get when he was on the pitch.
Really?
People loved him. He was getting like standing ovations. It was crazy. So I think, you know, Spurs fans won't be too upset to see him go. They'll wish him all the best. So I think it's a nice move for him.
Oh, that's cute.
What before we move on to the questions, any other business in terms of transfers you guys want to talk about?
Yes.
Any deals?
Yes. Dave? One that has just apparently gone through.
Go for it.
No, actually, it's going to go through it has gone through. Sorry. It's been confirmed by Morata, the Juventus, whatever he is, the director or whatever you call him. Alexandro has moved to Juventus. That is a massive signing. Alexandro is brilliant. He's such a good left back. He plays for Porto. He did play for Porto last season in the Champions League. He was one of the reasons why it was him and Danilo at the other side that's joined Real Madrid. Those two were so good. That's why Porto got so far last year, was their fullbacks were brilliant. Alexandro made more interceptions than any other player in the Champions League last season. Fantastic talent, very good at going forward, very good at taking players on. It's just, Juventus are just getting better.
There you have it. There you have it.
They're
getting better.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's move on to the questions. Lots of questions this week. Let's try and get through them all. Angus Moyer on Twitter asks, who do you think is the best World Cup winning captain from the modern era? Love the show. Thanks, Angus.
Ooh.
Captain, World Cup winning captain from the modern era. What are we saying? 90 onwards? Italian 90 onwards?
Yeah, probably.
We have Germany in 2014, which was Philipp Lahm, I think. Then we have Spain in 2010, which would have been
Iker Casillas.
Iker Casillas, I imagine.
Yeah.
Iker Casillas took the armband. Yes, he did. and then we're moving on to Italy, who I think that was Fabio Cannavaro.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken.
I've got World Cup winning captains here, guys.
Oh, yes.
And after Cannavaro, who was before Cannavaro?
There was Brazil. Is that Cafu?
Oof.
Yes, I think so.
Oh, there's an argument for Cafu there, isn't there? And then Didier Deschamps, which is surely...
Ooh.
Which year is that?
That's 98.
That's 98, right? That is 98. Surely that's 98.
Who's 94?
94 was Italy versus Brazil, and Brazil won on penalties. So that's Dunga, is it not?
Yes, it is Dunga. Correct. Yeah.
Ooh, there's some very good captains there.
Oh, that's poor. You know what?
Who I think I've got mine.
Come on in. Go on,
I think I'm going to go with Cannavaro.
I was tempted to say Cannavaro, but you know,
captain, mate.
Is it the best? Are we saying like the best player out of all them, or is it the best captain who inspired them to the World Cup victory? Is that what we're saying?
Ooh, that is a new kettle of fish. That inspiring to victory.
Then in that case, I mean, it has to be Casillas consistently, right?
He gets a hard rap nowadays, but he probably was the best goalkeeper in the world at that time, wasn't he?
Philip Lahm, pretty incredible. It's like winning an Oscar almost for Philip Lahm, isn't it? You know, the end of his career, the
crowning achievement,
pretty incredible.
Good lad. Well, I'm definitely going to go with Cannavaro. I'm going to stick, not going to twist. What do you think?
You know what? I can agree with Dave. That's fine.
Let's go for Cannavaro.
Good lad.
Full house. Next question. Alejandro says, "Who is better looking, Pella or Giroud?" It was mentioned that we were talking, you know, about most attractive male footballers last week, and we didn't even mention Olivier Giroud, popularly recognised as one of the most handsome footballers in the world.
What if we stick Emre Can in there?
I'd still go Giroud. I think
good looking chap.
Giroud, isn't it? Giroud.
Yeah.
Pain Giroud. To Giroud.
Yeah, it's got a really does pain you, doesn't it? Because that's weird for you to say that.
Bale.
I'm jealous. Yeah, it's got to be Giroud, hasn't it, really?
Dave, Nicola F, always sending in the good questions, says, do you think Kovacic will have a big impact at Real Madrid this season? Signed.
Not this season. He's got a pretty difficult midfield to get into. You know, the likes of Toni Kroos, Luka Modric, Casemiro's been pretty good.
Yeah.
I can't see where he's going to fit in. I've seen him play for Inter Milan a number of times. Either he's really good or he's really rubbish. He's just inconsistent. Lou van Gaal mentioned it this week with Adnan Januzaj. Young players are inconsistent, and Kovacic is one of the most polar opposite players I've ever seen in my life. But when he's on form, he's brilliant. He can take it up. Take the ball past the opponent, glide past them. He completed more passes than any other player in Europe's top five leagues under 23 last season. He has the calibre. But this season, I don't think he's going to get in the side. It'd be interesting to see where Benitez would play him. Obviously, he's going to play Gareth Bale at 10. You know, it's going to be the two defensive midfielders. You're behind Modric, Toni Kroos in sort of his position. He's not really a ball winner, is he? You know, so it's an interesting one. But for the future, he's definitely for the future. And he's now playing with his idol, Luka Modric, which is a lovely story.
Lovely stuff. Bavy Bay on Twitter asks, any predictions as to what will be the biggest transfer signing on deadline day? My initial thoughts would be this whole John Kevin Stones thing. Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah. That one could drag on. I'm thinking John Stones could drag on.
Yeah.
I'm thinking United, having missed out on Pedro now. Ooh. They might want to splash about their cash rich. They might want to splash it about. We saw last deadline. Lacazette, you never know, eh? See?
Well, he did sign a new deal, so...
It means nothing. Pedro signed a new deal in June, and that means nothing. strong words, as they say. PN...
Tony, what about Luca Toni? Got to put some cash on Luca Toni. 22 goals in Serie A last season.
To United, yeah?
Yeah, to United, it'd be beautiful.
Why not? On a similar topic, PN says, could United get big name player, I assume it means this season... Maybe Bale.
Can they get a big name player, man?
Yeah, maybe he does mean player. He's mentioned Gareth Bale or Antoine Griezmann. They're not going to happen, are they?
I don't think so. Antoine Griezmann's just had his minimum release up to €80 million, but he would be the man. He'd be the man.
He's also for
Bale in him, definitely 100%.
He's also said, right, I'm going to try and pronounce this one. Lilic from Roma. Oh, perfect. From Roma. Could he work under Louis van Gaal? At J2C9 on Twitter asks.
So Ilicic, do you mean the guy at Fiorentina?
Yeah. Elevez, like I said.
Hey, how do you spell it, mate?
Well, he's spelling it L J A J I C. They all look the same. It's like L's and J's.
I'm well confused here, mate. Do you want to ping me the name? I don't know who you're talking about.
Next question. Mortadar Nasir says, what do you make of Olivier Giroud? He's a handsome chap. But he says, personally, I think the criticism of him is harsh. He came on, he started a game against Crystal Palace on the weekend, scored a great goal. I liked his quote after the game. You see on Sky Sports what he said? He said, I've scored 16, you know, I've scored 16 goals in the last 6 months or so, 19 of which have been with my first touch. So his maths wasn't great, but he makes a good point there. A lot of his goals have been from first touches. You know, this is a player who Arsenal fans 1 week will say he's not good enough to lead the line. The next week they'll say he's a great finisher and is a, you know, great front man. What is your opinion of him, Dave and Lawrence? And, you know,
going back to that previous question, yes, he can fit in the Louis van Gaal system. Now this question, I think that is Olivier Giroud. He's a poacher. You know, he'll be commended on his finishing 1 week, and then the next week he'll be anonymous in the game, hence the slating. I think Arsenal fans think a bit too much of Olivier Giroud, that he has this brilliant combination play and can play players in and this type of thing. He's just a goal scorer, and I think if you accept him as a goal scorer, then you'll be sort of happy with him. But if you think he's going to be, you know, Benzema or Lewandowski or any of the players that have actually got a bit of technical ability, nowhere near that standard.
Next question is from Steve Donahue, who asks, City, new title favourites, ? Or is that just a premature knee-jerk reaction? We did mention it before. They are the new title favourites, I think it's fair to say. And yeah, perhaps it is a knee-jerk reaction. We're only two games in, but they look like the strongest team by far, I'd argue. Any thoughts?
They do look like the strongest team by far. I think that the interesting thing has not been so much just the additions to the squad, but also the fact that other players around those guys have looked invigorated by that. You know, the addition of Sterling, it seems to have brought a bit of belief to this team that there's a bit of a forward-thinking mentality around Man City. And I think that's also part of the outside as well, that Man City, most people underestimated them. Most people didn't think they were going to make many moves in the summer, and they didn't think they could upgrade the squad with so few moves, despite the fact they spent a lot of money. So, it does put them as favourites. But the question is, who's going to challenge them? Are we looking at Chelsea? Are we looking at Manchester United, Dave?
No, we're not, because we did not buy Matt Hummels, or we did not buy Osimhen, or we did not buy Sergio Ramos. Hence, we do not have a good sense of that pairing. Going back to it was Jajic, the guy that was on trial at Man United. No, I don't think he can play under Louis van Gaal, because he's a strange one. He's a bit of a nutcase. Louis van Gaal and Jajic. It wouldn't work. The relationship would be toxic.
I like this question from AlexUnited15 on Twitter. He says, you know, touching on what we talked about, do you think this could be Mourinho's last season as Chelsea manager? So next season, next August, do we still think Jose Mourinho will be Chelsea manager? I'm going to say yes. I think he'll still be there. His third season syndrome.
He's bigging it up too much. It's one of those things where Mourinho kind of said that he's going to stay. So for him to sort of not stay now, is that Mourinho-esque though? Is that something to be like, I've stayed for 3 years, I've won the Champions League now, I'm off. Classic.
Dave, do you remember how he left last time?
God, he left in it. You know, it was all sorts of steam last time, wasn't it? But I'm thinking about the Inter Milan days where he was in that third season, he did win the Champions League, he kept it very quiet, he didn't tell anyone, and then after, you know, he signed a deal. I think he signed a deal with, was it Real Madrid that he moved to? He signed a deal like 2 weeks before the Champions League final. So maybe he's going to do that. Just explode, disappear.
Maybe. Liam, at Liam_DOD, always asking good questions, says, if United miss out on Pedro and Otamendi, which they pretty much have, who should they go after, Dave? Is there one signing you think United should be focusing on?
They've already messed up, haven't they? They should have got Matt Hummels. He looks so good this year.
He's not happy tonight.
They made the best signing of the summer. You've got Memphis. That's a
correct. Great signing.
We needed that attacking threat. We needed a box-to-box midfielder. We needed a controlling midfielder. Now we need some flaming centre-halves. It's so basic. But they've all either signed a new deal or they've decided they want to stay where they are. So we've got Daley Blind, who's going to be excellent until he comes up against Christian Benteke, who will tear him a new one. And then everyone will lose their confidence in the poor guy.
Daniel Thompson, you sound a little bit depressed, Dave. I feel bad for you. Yeah.
I just don't get it.
What are you doing, Ed? What are you doing? Stop throwing the cash at people. Sorry.
Daniel Thompson says, what do you think about Aston Villa's transfer window?
Villa.
Pretty good. It seems to be the general consensus.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, my God. Idrissi Gyan was so good against Man United. I love him. He's one of those players that's like Blaise Matuidi. That's just got so much energy. Brilliant at tackling. He's just everywhere. He's so good. I love that. I love those types of players.
Admiral Kizaru at Brian Steve Q on Twitter says, Eriksen v Ozil in the Premier League. Full stop. More of a statement than a question, but I mean, I think, is he saying who's better here, I guess?
Eriksen v Ozil.
Obviously.
Ozil was, I mean, despite Arsenal losing, Ozil still looks pretty good.
Let me ask you this question, right? So, Ozil, first week, he's, you know, a ghost. Arsenal fans on his back. The next week against, you know, Crystal Palace, he's all of a sudden the second coming of Christ.
It's almost like they're reactionary people.
It's very, yeah, my God, it's like, you know, it's one way or the other. Spencer Owen released an interesting video last week on his channel. He said, you know, Dimitri Payet v Ozil, he was sort of arguing that Payet was, he's a better value player. Ozil hasn't lived up to his price tag. I saw the True Geordie commenting on that video that, you know, Ozil was not Batman, he's Robin, he's, you know, he's not the, the main player, he's the, you know, the supporting act. Yes, he costs a lot of money, but that's not his fault. You know, that's inflated perhaps what people expect his impact to be on games and on the club. I mean, what do you make of the, what do you actually make of the Ozil signing? It was 42.4 million, a lot of money. Arsenal fans lost their minds when he joined, but they do seem to go back and forth on Ozil is either this world-class, world-beater 1 week, the next week he's absolute crap. So, I mean,
Wenger's either, you know, in or out, so those kind of things. I just think it's...
One extreme or the other.
Well, it's just, you know, it's a very extreme reaction to a lot
of
things.
Maybe he's just a very good player, and that's...
He's clearly shown moments of brilliance out on the football pitch. He's been involved in a lot of very good teams. People have extolled the virtues at Real Madrid, at times at Arsenal and at times for Germany, that Ozil has shown. And I think that for that reason, there's a lot of quality surrounding him. And I think it's worth him having it basically not being compared all the time. I found it a little bit weird when he compared him. It's clearly the idea that he was going for clicks on that one, right? But at the same time, I think he makes an interesting point.
Yeah, of course. But he was just, you know...
Ozil is a luxury.
I think the interesting thing with Ozil is what people point out, that for that amount of money, you do expect a match winner, someone who's going to impose their will upon a game, who's not going to shirk, who's going to just, you know, take it by the scruff of the neck. Ozil is not that player.
No, he won't win you a title. He won't win you a World Cup, but he'll be in the squad. Do you kind of get what I mean? It's kind of like, he will never carry a team by the scruff of the neck and win a championship, but he fits in very well to a winning side. I think that's maybe the best way to put it. Going back to the question, I would prefer Christian Eriksen.
Oh, he's gone there.
I would prefer Ozil, just because the way that I would want to play my football.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool with me, bud.
Those are...
Yeah, no, good. Thanks, Alicia.
Those are drastic...
Thanks, Dave.
Those are drastic words. Serious words. There,
drastic.
From you two. James Kayser on Twitter says, best signing so far? Best signing of the summer so far? I'm biased because it was last night. I've been influenced, but Memphis Depay, I think, is going to be a serious player, isn't he?
Yes.
I know it's only Club Bruges, but I mean...
100%. He's going to be good. He's going to be ridiculous.
He's going to be just good.
He's going to be very good at scoring goals.
He's going to be all right, that player.
I did some stat digging yesterday, and Memphis Depay has taken 58% of Manchester United's shots in all competitions this season. That equates to 19 shots in three games. It's absolutely ludicrous.
This brings us on nicely to the next question. Bearing in mind, you know, the reaction from last night, people are getting excited about Depay now. Bearing in mind it was Club Bruges, we've got German Chicas Jr., at Chicas Jr. on Twitter. Thank you for your question. He's saying, is Depay the next Ronaldo? Dave, you've had three games to judge.
No, he's not. Because Ronaldo was a different player. Ronaldo was a winger. Ronaldo started off as a winger and became a goal scorer. Memphis Depay, for me, is more like I am Robin. That's who I would say is a similar player of him. I mentioned this on Full Time Devils today. I was on one of their shows. Go and check it out. It'll be the Newcastle preview. And I was just saying... He's more of an inside forward, you know, cuts into his stronger foot and looks for the far post, the far post curler, but is also very explosive. Different to Ronaldo. Ronaldo, sort of, his game has matured over time, but I think Memphis will be more of a goal scorer earlier on in his career, let's say.
I think someone made a good tweet earlier in the day. They said Beckham plus Cantona plus, who it must have been, Ronaldo, equals Memphis. And I think they made an interesting point that, I mean, it's nothing to do with the kind of the stature of a player yet, but what they're saying is he's got the ability of someone like David Beckham or Cantona or Ronaldo. He has the temperament, possibly, of someone like Cantona.
Yes.
And then the promise of someone like Ronaldo when he was there. That doesn't make him three times the player, but it certainly puts him in that category of excitement. And I think that's great for United. And that's great for United fans as well. I think to have that kind of player and to prove that you can almost so easily sign that player, like so easily convince him, is fantastic. It works.
I read a cracking article on him today that was talking about how he sort of, you know, he cut people out of his life. So basically he used to go out clubbing and all that type of thing. And then he just, it just came to him that, look, you know, if he wants to be a professional footballer and he wants to do this properly, he's going to have to cut some people out of his life. You know, the people that, you know, are troublemakers. He mentioned quite a funny thing. It was basically like he likes taking his friends out to dinner, but when his friends stop appreciating him taking out to dinner, he'll cut them off. Yeah, but fair play to him.
You know, how do you measure appreciation?
Well, it's difficult. Bring me a rating, like a scale at the end of it. Did you enjoy dinner out of 10?
Five, mate, tonight. All right, here's the next one. Well, thanks for coming out.
This is a fantastic question, I think. Yeah. James on Twitter.
Who would you cut out on the podcast, Adam?
Definitely. Sorry, mate. Oh, you're right. You're here. James says, will the USA win a World Cup before England win their second? I like that question. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot.
I'm tempted. Part of me wants to say yes.
It's tempting to say yes, isn't it? If Roy Hodgson becomes USA manager, then I think they probably will. I'm gonna say yes. I think I'll say yes as well.
Yeah, I think I'll say yes.
They're progressing as a footballing nation, whereas we're just stuck in the doldrums.
Can I also just put it this
depressing?
They have an entire almost an entire continent's girth of people there.
But,
I know they're not a continent themselves.
They don't have Harry Kane, mate, do they? Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Think about
that. About the Kane
factor. They do have Jose Altidore, so
suck on that. Put that in your weapons, mate.
Swings and roundabouts.
Matt McHugh says, is this year the year City make it past the round of 16 in the Champions League? Based on current, you know, the way they're looking. Maybe.
yes.
Depends on the group.
They're the seventh best team in Europe.
They'll get Barcelona now, won't they?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. If they don't draw Real, Barca, Bayern in that last 16, yes, they'll get through. But then they've also got to do the group stage properly, haven't they? Because they've been messing that up for the past, like, you know, 4 or 5 years. You've got to take that seriously, win those games, and then they'll be fine.
There you go. Kenyan Guna says, you didn't answer my question from last week. Whether any of you would exchange your managers for Arsene Wenger?
That was a good question.
No. No, thank you. Thank you, but no, thank you.
Are you kidding?
I wouldn't change him. I like Pochettino. He's young, he's hungry.
Okay.
Wenger's for an Arsenal manager. No, thank you.
Does he mean now, or does he mean, you know, in like, 90. I mean, if Liverpool.
Okay, if you're talking 97, of course.
If Liverpool had done it, that would have been incredible.
Yeah, of course.
But now.
No.
He's semi tempted.
Tempted. But yeah, Brendan Rodgers, he's, you know, young manager.
I'd sound him out. I'd do the sort of. available for a. No? Okay, good. No, that was fine. No, we've got Brendan Rodgers. It's all right, mate. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Would you swap him, Dave, Louis Van Gaal for Wenger?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I'd probably say yes. Because I like Wenger. He's got a good longevity to him, and I like managers with longevity.
I like him as well.
Nice.
Next question comes from Philip Eklund, who says, have United lost their status in Europe, what with Otamendi, Pedro, Ramos not going to Old Trafford?
No.
No.
We're well good and shit. Nah.
Next question. Shush, aka Juice26, says, Oh, my God, this is a hard one. If you could have any player from any generation play for the club you support, who would you choose?
Kenny Dalglish.
Is he saying many player from your club from any time in the past? I think we've had that question before. Is he basically saying if you could have any player in the history of football to play for your club right now, who would you choose?
We've answered that. I think we have. Did I say Kenny Dalglish before?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Kenny Dalglish, yeah. A centre-back.
Shailin Patel says, what manager is capable of managing a big club such as United, Madrid, Bayern, etc., but hasn't yet been given the chance? Now, I don't want to be, no offence to Borussia Dortmund here, but you might say Jurgen Klopp is someone who's probably going to go on to manage one of these huge super clubs.
Fair to say that they're not a super club, are they? They're a big club, but they're not one of these.
He said big club, so I didn't want to, I didn't want to try and offend it. But super club.
You've upset me, Adam.
Sorry, mate. I can only apologise. Got any suggestions for people like Klopp, or maybe in a few years who are going to be on that, have that status, or on the verge of, you know, managing one of these massive clubs?
Imagine Gary Monk.
Yeah, you know, Gary Monk.
He's doing pretty well, isn't he?
Yeah,
Brendan Rodgers.
I've seen a few people. Well, Spurs aren't a super club. I've seen a lot of people saying Eddie Howe. They see him as the future Spurs manager. You know, this is someone in a few years they'd love to see manage Spurs. Could go on.
He's quite young, isn't he? He's young lad still, so he could potentially get to the top.
There you go. This is a good one. Attack of Zach on Twitter said the best player outside of Europe's top five leagues. My knowledge outside the top five leagues is poor. So, is there any suggestions for me from you guys?
That is a
even the championship. Do you know any championship players that's technically outside of the top five leagues?
Could we maybe say, yeah, I mean, you could probably say a championship player, right? But I mean, you could also say someone like
Russia.
Give me a second to Google.
From Ajax, he has scored 4 goals in the Eredivisie this season, more than any other player. El Ghazi from Ajax. He's a winger. He's had a pretty good start to the year. I'm just trying to think, because a lot of the talent that you sort of know has come to the Premier League or has gone wherever. You know, the likes of Memphis Depay, he was an absolute star, obviously, in the Eredivisie. It's a difficult one. It's outside my specialist area. I usually class myself as a top five European.
I'm thinking of my football manager save. I think he's been scouting.
Zenit.
Yeah, you got Hulk. That's true. Level. That's a good shout.
You've got Danny also at Zenit St. Petersburg.
Yeah, I was going to say a Russian club is going to be that club, isn't it?
They've got a lot of money to chuck around.
Maybe that's a good point. Here's what we can do. We can crowdsource this as an answer. If you have anyone who's particularly good on FIFA, or you have someone who's good on Football Manager, or you have someone that you've been watching in maybe a league that you're enjoying at the moment, then let us know. And we'll answer that question next week with the answers that we get given.
I'll tell you what.
I like that a lot.
When I was watching PSV, Jetro Williams, the left back, was brilliant. He was well good. I'm surprised he's not been snapped up by anyone yet. But anyway.
Like Lawrence says, send in your answers. We can look at them. Dave can bring a few stats, maybe a little bit of insight. Beautiful. I love it. Richard B. asks on Twitter, will Leicester finish in the top 10 this season? Bearing in mind, they are top of the league right now. They have confounding expectations.
Is the question not, are they going to win the league?
Well, you know, well, now it should be. Believe us. It should be.
No, the question is not are they going to win the league. The question is what? That they will finish where?
Top 10. I don't think they will.
The middle class, though, is so convoluted that you could go from 13th to 10th in a very short amount of time. Right, and it's a manager like Ranieri, you know, you've got a pretty decent shout there. But I mean, at the same time, the intensity they're going to have to play with against some of these top sides in order to do that is. Well, that's going to be pretty high. How long can Vardy keep this form up if Vardy doesn't is allowed to keep this form up? And it's basically how Ranieri plays these big sides, because we haven't essentially seen him play a United or a, and that's what we'll see this weekend is them play. They play Spurs, don't they? So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Ranieri plays that, whether a true underdog in a sense.
Juan Vargas says, what is the most boring football game you have been to?
Good question.
When the Olympics were on in London, I won tickets to one of the football games. It was the worst pile of shite.
Women's football, was it? No, it was men's football.
Bloody
it was sexist
something
shit.
Like, I can't even remember who it was. It was like Mexico v, I don't know, Japan or something. I can't even remember. It was, oh, it's South Korea or something. Like, oh, it's awful. I walked out before.
Yeah, what shit countries.
Extra time. I walked out. I just had it. I had enough.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa,
I just walked out. It was going to penalties. And I still walked out because I was like, I can't.
You're remember. Just a disgrace, aren't
it's
you?
Terrible. It's terrible, but you know. Whatever.
I went to a really rubbish game in League One once. I went to Bournemouth versus Hartlepool, and we got there late, so we were there like 5 minutes late, and the first goal was scored inside 4 minutes. So we watched pretty much, you know, no goals in 85 minutes of the game, and it was terrible, rubbish standard of football.
I've been to a Liverpool 0-0, and that was pretty bloody boring. I don't remember the team, and I remember just being really upset as a kid, like, 0-0. Dad was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Although 0-0s are often good, but like as a kid, you're not watching the aspects of the game that is a 0-0. Do you know what I mean? You're just looking for the goals or the flashpoints, and there weren't any. But then it's Jonathan Wilson, and this is a really funny one, who says he loves 0-0s because he feels like you learn something from it. And, you know, there's something actually interesting about it because tactically it's played out in such a way. And I'm inclined
classic
to agree.
Classic Wilson, that.
Barney Rene says the same. And you know what? They're basically my two, along with Graham Hunter, they're probably my two favourite journalists.
It's all about the reactiveness of football. Like, someone takes a goal lead, what does the opposition manager do? What does the manager that's taking the lead do? That's what I like. I like the transition.
Yeah, but Dave, you're not being subtle enough.
Sorry, mate.
You're saying, oh, it's about the goals, mate. It's about the...
It's the tweaks after the goals. That's what I was saying. I find
tactical,
really
tactical. Tactical.
If it's about the tweaks which cause the goals, or even better, what if it's about the tweaks which then cause people not to score goals? Because the problem is...
Nah, give it a rest. It's about goals, mate.
If a goal doesn't happen... Then
tactically, you've not exposed the opposition. You've not overloaded an area, and that's a tactical issue that you've not done that.
Or is the opposition played you well? And I think that's the whole point of tactics.
Then you've got to expose them, haven't you? You know, it's interesting. It's all interesting. Yeah. This football game we like.
God, but that's it's not bad, is it?
Why aren't teams more adaptable? Like, why can't a team just go and overload someone? Like, I guess that's the problem, isn't it? Is like, you know, we see it from five-a-side. I mean, how is it so hard to play a tactical game in five-a-side? Imagine trying to coordinate 11 men or women out on a pitch and sort of be like, overload that area, but also at the same time, don't overload it so much that these people get down the other end and score a goal. And that's like football broken down. But there's something, when you break it down like that, it does sound crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, talking about overload, Man United had that issue in the first half against Club Brugge. You know, behind Luke Shaw, there was acres of space in the first half, and we sorted it out in the second half. But, you know, that's an example of what you're saying, Lawrence.
We've got time for one more question. I couldn't get all through all the questions. Apologies, that's, you know, run out of time. But
we need to do an extra podcast, guys, because we need to get through all the questions we've ever done.
Extra separate podcast, a different day of the week, all the questions. I like that. Let us know what you think of that. But anyway,
I've actually got one question.
Adam, okay, go on.
From Harsh Singhal, I think his name is. We accidentally missed a question a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Who do you think is the best back four? I think he's talking about Ever.
Okay, yeah, because he says, being a Man U fan, mine is Gary, Rio, and I love how he uses their first names, and then he goes, Vidic, Ever.
It's because you don't call him Nemanja. You don't look him in the eye, and you don't call him Nemanja. They're the rules, Lawrence.
Yeah, and he has never been so hard that he's killed someone. That is a great back four, isn't it?
That's a good one, definitely, 100%. That's a top back four.
Back four. What about this as a back four? You go Cafu, you go Maldini, you go Nesta, you go... Who's completing the season? Who's at right back?
Or you go Costa-Curta and Nesta, and then Maldini at left back. Cafu, right back.
Baresi, wasn't Baresi in this?
Baresi at one point was in that team.
What about the... What about the old...
what about the Italian side that won the World Cup? I mean, having Fabio Grosso in any back four is pretty much a huge achievement, isn't it?
Well, to be honest, that Barca team from last year was a pretty good defence. Alaba, Alves, Piqué and Mascherano. That was lovely.
I love Mascherano along that back line. It's fantastic.
The Barcelona back four in the Guardiola era.
Yeah.
Puyol in there as well.
Can I go with, I mean, Liverpool had a pretty classic one. Liverpool had Sammy Hupia, Jamie Carragher, Steve Finnan, and John Arnorisa. Now, if you don't think that they are good players. They're still, all four of those players are arguably together. Classic Premier League players.
But Hansen, Liverpool, Thompson, centre of the defence.
Yeah, well, you've got Hansen and maybe Lawrenson there.
Yeah.
Phil Thompson was good as well. And then you've got, I mean, you know, when you get onto wing backs, you could talk all day about the evolution of the wing back, right? What about, I mean, I was trying to think, well, Real Madrid surely have had some great centre back combinations. Juve, surely. When Juve with Cannavaro and anyone, right?
Well, you've got to look at, you know, Inter Milan when they won the Champions League. You know, you've got Javier Zanetti at right back. Left back, maybe. And then Maicon at right back, Lucio and Walter Samuel. That is pretty tasty. I've got to say as well, Louis van Gaal is pretty rubbish at centre-backs. He sold Lucio when he was... Lucio was 28 and Louis van Gaal had just taken over at Bayern Munich and thought Lucio was surplus to requirements, who then went on to win the Champions League at Inter Milan through a defensive display. That's my issue with Louis van Gaal. Maybe he doesn't know how to buy a good centre-back.
What about Winterburn, Nick Dixon, Adams, Keown, even the Invincibles as well?
That was problem is, Winterburn, Nigel Winterburn looks like your dad.
My dad specifically, or just your dad?
Your dad. Yeah, your dad specifically. Mate,
does he, mate? Carvalho and Terry. Gallas.
That's a good one. Yeah, Gallas.
That's a lot. Who's the best back four? That AC Milan. You know, AC Milan has always had very good defenses. Really. One of those Maldini teams.
To be fair, is it really a back four if you play a sweeper?
I think with I'd say the Nesta one, you know, when they were in 2000, 4-6, where they had Nesta, Maldini, and then, Cafu and Costa Kerr, or whoever else was in that lovely little side.
Yeah, good point, Dave. Yeah, all right.
Baresi, Costa Kerr, Maldini, Tassotti, I've been told.
And, stop, Adam, you can't go on Wikipedia. what about...
encyclopedic football knowledge.
What about Ramos...
listen, we've got to move on.
Ramos, Pepe, Marcello, and
Carvajal.
Nah, they've won.
That's crazy. Too many nutters in that back four.
Listen to this. Final question for this week. Colm Cooney on Twitter says, which player do you hate the most and why?
That's hard, isn't it?
I'm not a very hateful person myself, so I find it hard to hate a player.
That is a tricky question, isn't it?
Steven Gerrard.
Really?
Whoa,
yeah.
Gerrard.
I love how Adam and I are going, tricky question. Dave's like Steven Gerrard, mate.
Gerrard, fucking hate him.
Yeah, Steven Gerrard, definitely, 100%.
Hi, Dave.
Wow. He's just a rotter, isn't he?
Hi, Dave. Back in the day when he played, I disliked Gary Neville intensely.
That makes sense.
I think the classic, John Terry is an extremely hard man to like, I would say. He makes it very difficult to like him.
Right. What about an Argentinian, maybe one of the Argentinians in the team? Diego Maradona is easy to love.
I don't hate him.
Broke my heart. I think this is even another question. A player that broke my heart was Carlos Tevez. He was my favourite player at United before he joined City. And he destroyed me as a person. It took me years to recover over that.
Yeah, you really need to get out more, don't you, Dave?
Do
you actually hate him, though, Dave? Do you hate him now?
I can't. It's the problem. I can't hate him. I can't bring myself to hate him.
Took your heart out, stamped on it. Still wish her the best, eh?
Yeah,
I think, I'm going to give John Terry because he's a terrible human being.
He's a terrible human. Ashley Cole was a terrible human.
Ashley
Cole. Yeah. You know, well, that was a really funny tweet the other day where someone said, at least if Eva Canero had shot someone with an air rifle, she wouldn't have gotten as much trouble as this. And I was like, it's a good point, actually. Good point. She probably would have been better going on the pitch shooting Hazard and then walking back off.
What is life? That brings an end to episode 18 of the Front Three. A little bit of a, you know, extra long edition here. Thank you very much for listening. If you've got any questions or suggestions or thoughts on the podcast, tweet us at The Front Three. As Lawrence said there, players outside the top five major European leagues, any players you know you've seen on FIFA, Football Manager, or in real life, if you're that way inclined, let us know. We can talk about next week. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening. Lawrence, where can the good people find more of your work?
Lozcast, LOZCAST online.
And Dave...
Well, it's Squawker Dave on Twitter, SQUAWKADAVE. I've done a few videos on YouTube recently, so go and check out my channel. Check out the stuff. I do a video after every Man United game, you know, talking about three talking points of the game. I've done some pre-season stuff, so just get over there, have a look. Have some fun. What about you, Adam? Where can we find you?
I love it. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Botwood or on YouTube, The Football Republic. We just did an amazing debate between Spencer Owen and the True Geordie. Lawrence had the tough job of refereeing that one, but I think, you know, did a pretty bang up job. I think we got it. I think we got it right.
Amongst the Lions, didn't you?
The Lions.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.